This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball national team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello everyone from around the world and welcome to the Inside Pitch, where we interview baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts who also like to challenge the status quo. Welcome, I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. And listen, for our listeners just starting, we've got listeners all over the world. Just to tell you our type of, you know, the type of show we have, we want to let coaches, players, and parents know that, you know, we believe in learning something daily and are committed to the continual growth of improvement of your team and your programs. If that's what you're committed to, that's what our show loves to give you. So also like to remind you that most coaches have a history of teaching how they were taught or how they did it. Many times that may not be the right way. There are better ways to become a better coach, and we share with you the unique insights from the very best coaches, teachers, sports psychologists, experts in all areas of the game from all over the world. Let me tell you before we start, give you a couple of our quotes in the Inside Pitch that we really love. One is by Oliver Wendell Holmes. He once said, "One's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never regains its original dimensions." That is what we are trying to do on this show, is stretch everyone's mind when it comes to teaching. Our second quote comes from the famous movie Moneyball. "If we weren't already doing it this way, is this the way you would start?" This quote makes you think of better ways to do what you are currently doing right now. Okay, so today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/insidepitch. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from, your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MPS player. And listen, if you like the show, go to iTunes, Stitcher, or any major podcast outlet, click subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating and review. This helps us continue to, you know, grow the show and continue to have the show out there for you. Finally, a special thanks to Lineup Media Group for hosting the show. You can hear many great shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. So check out lineupmediagroup.com. Okay, now the important thing of the show is our topic. We're going to be talking about the myths of teaching hitting and the philosophy that we as coaches should be following to teach all our players. First, let me tell you about our special guest, Troy Silva. I know this is going to be special because Troy is one of the up-and-coming people when it comes not only to hitting but coaching all over the U.S. He has been on Twitter more than anybody that I've ever seen. He's got so many followers. His social media, what I love about this guy is that he is a person who gives things to help other people. He's just not a person looking for money all the time. He loves giving information. There's a lot of videos on his Twitter. We'll give you all that feedback. He really genuinely cares about the kids. He teaches them the benefits of, you know, how you play the game right on the field, but also what how you, you know, develop as a young man off the field, how important that is. And we'll be getting into something, some of those things. I want you to check out Troy's Twitter at Troy P. Silva, and also check out RihoAthletics.com for all their programs. And Riho is R-I-J-O Athletics.com. Troy's going to tell us also later about an exciting program that they just started called Rio TV, and he'll be telling us about that. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Troy, and then we will get the show rolling. He is an author of a book that I have read. It's an outstanding hitting book, 9 Innings of Hitting. It's a bestseller on Amazon. Troy played professional baseball with the Cleveland Indians organization, and he played for the legendary Ed Sheff at the national champion Lewis and Clark College. Now, I remember Troy, he's not going to know this, in the Northern League. He played for the Sioux Falls Canaries. He also played for the I'm forgetting the second team, and we'll get to that, the Lincoln team. And for a couple years, he was the top three in ERA in that league. And the reason I remember all that, not only because I read his bio, but I also was in the Northern League for 8 years as a coach and player development person. So I remember Troy from that perspective. Very, very, very competitive individual. And currently, Troy is with Rio Athletics, one of the biggest baseball softball training facilities on the West Coast. Okay, so let's welcome Troy Silva to the Inside Pitch. Troy, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. I appreciate you having me on up here in what's supposed to be rainy Seattle. It's actually raining today, but the weather's been changing a little bit. So hopefully we get some sun soon.
Well, we got a little bit in common. I'm in Chicago, so the weather sometimes can be a little similar. All right, listen, let's do this. And Troy, and just for our fans all over the world, because I think it's important that people realize how good Troy is. They're going to realize it after this show. I want to start with, you know, the overall kind of a coaching philosophy you have, how you develop that philosophy that relates to coaching in general, but also a little bit applied to the hitting aspect. So give us a little perspective of that.
Well, specifically with the hitting aspect of it, I guess my overall philosophy, and this is the philosophy that I've learned over the years, is you got to give hitters what they need individually. So I guess if you were to kind of isolate my philosophy into one philosophy, it's give hitters what they need individually, not just some, you know, blanket approach or some cookie cutter approach that you have to do. So kids these days are taught specific things that aren't necessarily wrong, but overall, they're very rarely given what they need individually. And if you give them what they need individually, you'll see that they're going to help the team, number one, and that their improvements individually will be outstanding. I see it on a regular basis. If you give kids what they specifically need, fix their specific weaknesses, they'll improve instead of just looking better from what I see on a regular basis.
And we have a tendency, I think all of us as coaches, I know we were all young at one time, and you know, and we kind of taught, you know, everybody the same, and that's what you're basically saying. Where they're not, everybody's not the same. They're individuals.
Yes, absolutely. It's a common thing that's out there, and it's definitely a hindrance, because I've seen it on a regular basis. I've seen kids hindered severely because of what is being taught, and it doesn't work for them. For example, you can't teach a 14-year-old kid that's 5'2" and 90 pounds soaking wet the same thing you teach an Albert Pujols who's 6'4", 250 pounds. I mean, they have to generate their own swing differently. The kid that's not that strong has to maybe do a little leg kick and maybe have a little bit more momentum going to the ball just to catch up to the ball. So that's kind of an example. Is you just got to be careful, even though it's not necessarily wrong to copy a specific big leaguer, giving them what they need depending on where they're at in their development.
You know, and we all evolve as coaches. Where did you start? You know, I mean, obviously you had that chef as an example, and many other coaches. And then you started to develop your own philosophy through trial and error. But who were some major people, or maybe some major areas why how you developed your philosophy?
Well, without a doubt, Ed Sheff was the main leader that I had in my life that I learned from. I would say 90% of what I teach today is based on his mental philosophies and what he taught me. I just do it in a more loving and a caring way, where you're not going to get smacked in your face or hit over the head with a fungo or anything like that. He was a great coach, great, knowledgeable man, probably the most knowledgeable baseball coach that I ever played for, ever knew. So most of the stuff is basically from him on the mental side of it. And then just like you said, the trial and error part. I mean, being in a cage the last 15 years of my life and being with all skill sets, all ages, both boys and girls, you kind of figure out what kids really need, and what they need isn't typically what we give them. So, yeah, well, I would definitely say Ed's top of the line. And then, you know, playing pro ball and stuff like that, there's guys here and there that you get nuggets from, and you constantly learn on a regular basis, still kind of putting forth what kids need.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting. You and I don't know each other that well. You were kind enough to send me your hitting book, and it's outstanding. But I feel like we do know each other in some ways, because there's some things that I've read, you know, from, you know, that you have written, whether on your Twitter or somewhere else, that, you know, I believe in also strongly and have believed in many years. And one of the things is, and I thought you said it brilliantly on another podcast, was, you know, it's amazing how we cuss, you know, we swear on the field when that's not really professional. It's not really a good example.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I'm really big on coaches being an influence, and I think everybody that follows me knows that I'm a Christian, and I try to lead by example of what Christ did for me. So it's not to say that I push it down anybody's throat, but I think there's an example portion that most coaches miss out on. I think kids these days are hungry for some discipline. They're hungry for some structure. They need a coach that cares. They need a coach that not only can just teach them how to swing the bat, but to challenge them in life too as well. So I say it all the time. I mean, cussing's not that big of a deal. I used to cuss. I used to hang out with, you know, all the guys on our baseball team that just swore and stuff like that. But what it does is it leads kids down a path of, when does it stop? I mean, cussing turns into drinking. Drinking turns into partying all night. Partying all night turns into just this never-ending story. So is cussing the end of the world? No, but I just try to live as a Christ-like example first, and then really just give kids some hope and give them, you know, a challenging, I guess, presence to let them know that there's more to what's out there, especially in the baseball world. You know, and I know the baseball world is pretty cocky. It's pretty arrogant. It's all self-centered. It's pretty dark. So yeah. I just think that the coaches just definitely need to step it up, and everybody's not going to be perfect, but I think we can lead by example.
Yeah, you're right. And baseball is a traditional game. You know, I mean, even in, you know, unfortunately, at the big league level, you know, somebody gets hit and then they don't forget. And, you know, somebody pitched a little bit too much inside and now somebody drills someone else and they don't forget. You know, kids see that kind of stuff and they think that's part of the game. You know, you don't even, and I haven't, I know in my career, very rarely, and I can remember maybe a couple times in 33 years, but you don't even go after the umpires.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just so much to it. I mean, it's kind of a culture. I say to a lot of people, it's a culture of just, you know, you cuss, you swear, you have this arrogance to you, you know, umpires, you belittle umpires, like they're less of a human than you are, like they never make mistakes. I mean, it's just this constant, I just call it the darkness. There's the darkness of this baseball world. And quite honestly, everybody just kind of goes with it and they think it's the norm. You know, I talk to parents on a regular basis and they kept all the parents. I mean, I'm talking 11, 12-year-old parents, and they think it's the norm that their coach should cuss and swear at their kid. And I'm saying, get out of that environment. That's not the norm. That's not what it should be. There are 11 and 12-year-old kids that are just learning, you know, how to play the game. So, yeah, it is a culture. And I try to do my best just try to, like you said earlier in the show, is like don't be the norm. You know, do something different. Do something that stands out. And I'm trying to lead the way as far as just being an example. And again, we're going to fail, but try to do your best to give these kids some hope.
Yeah, that's, I tell you what, that's a great example. And when you talk about your philosophy of hitting, let's talk about the foundation, and then we'll get into some other things. What's your foundation of hitting? Where does it all start?
You mean as far as what I've learned or what I teach?
I think more of what you teach, so our coaches can learn around the world from a very good teacher. You know, maybe you might address, you know, how you develop that also, how you, you know, started.
Well, anytime I start with a new player that's starting with me or wants to do lessons or do an evaluation of their skill set, I always start with, what are your on-field problems? I think most people start with, you know, they look at their swing off a tee and they go, oh, you do this, you do that, you do this, where you're not really going to see the same results off a tee as you are in a game situation. So I always ask the parents and the players, like, what do you really struggle with in a game? Do you struggle with anxiety? Do you struggle with pressure? Do you not see the ball well? Do you swing at bad pitches? And do you pop up a lot? Do you get jammed? I mean, there's all these questions that I ask. I have a list of about 15 or 20 questions that I usually ask. And that will usually give you an idea of what the player's real struggle is and what they really need to work on. So, it comes from just being in the cage and being every day doing lessons. You see that what you see off a tee doesn't always correlate to what you see in a game. So until we figure out what their struggles are in a game, you're just never going to fix it. So that's kind of, I guess, the foundational piece is get maybe just the several questions that you can ask players and just say, hey, what do you really struggle with? And really try to find out what it is. Are they late in the zone? Are they early in the zone? You know, and just really figure out what their real struggles are. And then once you find out what their real struggles are, then you can adjust the mechanics, you can adjust the timing and all that kind of stuff that goes with it.
Boy, that makes so much common sense. I mean, think about it. I know I'm sure I've made 1,000 mistakes. You know, I remember, starting off a tee and then all of a sudden, you know, Trent, you know, I thought I could figure out the kid's swing off a tee and start teaching from there. Boy, the way you do it, the way you do it is outstanding. Do you have players give you videos of game situation, you know, of games, and you look at that also?
Yeah, I mean, I can't get out and watch games. I mean, with the number of kids we train on a day-to-day basis, I just can't get out. So I have parents, you know, video some kids. But doing it as long as I have, you can kind of see just by asking questions what their real struggles are. And again, it's dependent on kind of their age. I mean, you deal with, let's say, a 9 to 10, 11-year-old, there's probably going to be a lot of fear involved, fear of being hit by the ball, fear of letting their parents down, that kind of stuff. And you deal with kids that are, you know, getting into high school, they're just physically not strong enough, swinging the BB bats, we work on a lot of bat speed. And then you work on, you know, high school kids, which is more approach, plan type stuff. And then you work on a college kid, and that's just 100% getting them some challenging BP, making minor adjustments, you know, same thing with pro-level guys. So it's kind of dependent on who you're dealing with too. And I think that's a big thing as well. I think most I shouldn't say most. I think a lot of coaches fail in that aspect of it. You know, they teach this blanket approach to everybody, and every level is going to be different as far as what they need.
Well, you know, you mentioned it. You mentioned a couple things, actually, and let's discuss that because, you know, hitting is fear, but, you know, fear can start with the parents. Explain that. How do you deal with parents and, you know, that want to be coaches or want to say something in the stands while the game's going on and all that?
Well, first of all, it's just kind of the way the culture is these days with the whole showcase and exposure stuff that's out there. I mean, you got 8 U travel ball teams, which is ridiculous. It's unbelievable to me. But it's kind of the culture. And I guess what baseball's turned into is, you know, everybody's worried about a college scholarship at 9 years old. And I'm just like, you got to get over that. I mean, we try to teach kids that don't focus on that stuff till it matters. And you'll know if you're good enough by, you know, how well you do over the years. So, you know, as far as parents, I mean, I'm pretty upfront and straight with them. I don't try to beat around the bush or anything. If a parent is, you know, too much involved, they'll say, hey, you probably just need to, you know, tone it down a little bit, let them play, let them have fun. It always goes back to the fun factor. It always goes back to, hey, it's not that big of a deal if your 12-year-old struck out on a Wednesday night game in Little League. It's not that big of a deal. They're not going to remember that 2 days from now. It's not a big deal, you know. So it's just you got to put it in perspective, and I think the perspective is lost because of a lot of the stuff that's out there these days with showcases and exposure, and you have to do this in order to do that, and you have to, you know, be seen by this person in order to, it's just craziness. So,
and there is a lot of, yeah, there is a lot of that within the culture of the game. And what about kids that are afraid? There's another fear factor, kids that are afraid of getting hit by the ball, which I would assume, you know, it's a natural reaction to start with when you first start playing the game.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's one of the questions that I get asked every coach's clinic that I do. Especially when we do like Little League coaches clinics, how do you get a kid not fearful of the ball? Well, I tell them you can't do anything about it. The only thing that you can do, and what I've learned over the years, is we have to reverse their mindset. Most kids, when they step in the box, that are fearful, and I tell everybody has some level of fear. It's just how much. Some kids can control it, some kids can't. So the only way to combat the fear is through aggression. So we got to teach our kids to step in the box, you know, get a little fired up, get in there and you're going to crush the ball. You have this mentality of aggression versus don't hit me. So I tell parents all the time, I say, your kid's getting in the box and he's thinking, don't hit me, don't hit me, don't hit me, don't hit me, don't hit me. Pitch didn't hit me and I tried to swing, and you just can't compete like that. So what we have to do is we have to reverse that, and we have to tell the kid to get in the box, I'm going to smash this ball, I'm going to crush it and get a little fired up, and then get them to get that mentality of ready to hit versus being hit, and you'll naturally slowly go away. But there's nothing that I've learned that you can do that works instantly. I know I try to have fun with it, but we have to, number one, recognize that there is some fear. That's the hard part. Most kids don't want to recognize that there is fear. And then number two, you know, deal with it through aggression. I've learned that the aggressiveness part is the only way to really combat it, because, I mean, I tell kids all the time, I was scared to get hit by the ball when I was 16, 17 years old. You get that kid that comes in throwing 85, 90, and he has no idea where it's going, there's fear involved. So it's just a natural way to fix it by going through the aggressiveness.
Now, on a fun note here, I'm sure you don't recommend what you had to go through with Coach Sheff. I heard your story about, you know, about one guy taking a pitch inside, and the next thing you know, you guys are off a 92-mile-an-hour pitching machine, and you had to get hit 3 times. I guess every guy had to get hit 3 times just to feel what it's like.
Yeah, I definitely don't recommend that. In fact, if you tried to do that in this day, you'd probably be arrested. But, yeah. I mean, it did teach me a huge lesson. It taught me that, you know, the batter's box is my area. I ain't moving, and you need to throw me a strike or I'm going to crush it type of mentality. And, you know, it just brought a toughness. I mean, I've actually done that here with some of our players. We'll put the machine at about 65, 70 and have them wear it, and they like it. It's fun, but it's definitely something that can actually make it worse at a younger age. I tend to, in lessons, if I know a kid's fearful, I'll throw a ball behind their neck and just kind of joke with them and just try to get them uncomfortable a little bit to mm-hmm. teach them how to deal with it. But, you know, lining up a 90-mile-an-hour ATEC machine right at you is definitely the scariest day of my life on the baseball field. That's for sure.
I can imagine. I've been hit by 90-mile-an-hours, but I didn't know it was coming for sure. Listen, I've also read, you know, you've discussed mechanics, you know, mechanics being important, but a very small aspect of the swing. Explain that.
Well, that's kind of the society of hitting instruction these days. I call it swing instruction. There's not too many hitting coaches out there these days. There's coaches that understand the swing, and they can, you know, duplicate a major league swing, and they can teach the swing properly. But what I've seen these days, and I'm sure you've seen it too, is I've seen kids these days that have hit with this Troy Silva dude and he has the best swing in America and can't hit.
Uh-huh.
So it's the mechanics are just a small portion of it. You know, it's just a small piece to a huge puzzle. Now, I'm not saying mechanics aren't important. I do talk mechanics a lot. We do mechanics during lessons and stuff like that. But the mechanics are just a small piece of what really, really, really needs to happen to be a great hitter. And the funny part about it is if you fix some other things, the mechanical stuff usually fixes itself. If I tell a kid all the time, it's like if I fix your timing, if I fix your mentality, if I fix your contact point and your bat speed, your swing's probably going to naturally fix itself. So, yes, mechanics are important, but it's just a little piece. And the problem is everybody thinks that on-field performance is dictated by how well your swing works. You know, you got kids that pop out the second baseman, they will go to the dugout, they're asking their coach, what did I do wrong? You know, they're asking their teammates, did you see me dip? Did you do all this stuff? You know, and it's just like, no, you just swung and hit the bottom of the ball. Sometimes you take great hacks and still just miss the ball. So we got to get out of the idea that the mechanics are the most important thing and that, you know, all on-field problems are from your swing.
And mechanics, I would assume, could also be a hindrance mentally.
Absolutely. I see it every day. Like I mentioned before, I see a bunch of kids that have great swings that can't hit. You know, it makes kids robotic. It doesn't allow them to adjust the movements. It doesn't allow them to be athletic. It doesn't allow them to be explosive. I see a lot of robotic swings these days. It's penetrated the baseball world to the point where it's actually become a huge hindrance. It's a huge hindrance. It's beyond what you would even think. You know, it's like the swing itself is just this main focus. So it's just crazy.
Well, before we get into the heart and soul, because we got two parts here, but before we get into the heart and soul of hitting, let's talk about the myths, because I know you have several myths that you've, you know, listed on Twitter many times. And I think, fans, you got to go to the Twitter, because it's every day, and Troy, every time he has something on his mind, he just puts it out there. And that's what I love about Troy. He doesn't think through it, you know, is it going to be politically correct? Is it going to be right? You know, it's what it's good for you and good for coaches and good for parents. So tell us a little bit about the myths.
There's probably 30, 40, 50 myths that are really out there, but I usually isolate the top 10. I'll talk about the top couple right now. The first one is this chopping down to the ball is the biggest thing that I see these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond belief because not one big leaguer hits like that. So it's just crazy to me how many kids are taught to chop down to the ball. So their hands and their back goes down to the ball versus arriving on the same plane as the pitch. So I've seen a lot of kids these days get taught that. And what it does is it doesn't allow them to arrive behind the ball and be consistent with their timing. And then it gives such a little room for error that you have to hit the ball perfectly or else you're not hitting the ball very hard. So the kids that chop down to the ball, obviously are going to hit a lot of ground balls in the dirt. Plus, what I see these days, the kids that chop down pop up a lot. Now, what I mean by that is the kids chop down to the ball, they hit the bottom half of the ball goes up in the air with a lot of backspin with no carry. So mm-hmm. I see a lot of kids these days that chop down and actually pop up. And it's funny because I've been out on fields numerous times and a kid chops down to the ball and the coaches say, you're dipping, you got to chop, you got to go down to the ball, and they chop down more and they pop up more. So the chopping thing, I don't know who came up with it because nobody's ever hit like that I know of. I think it's just a misinterpretation of what is supposed to happen with the hands. You know, it's explained, you know, the quickest way between two points is a straight line and you got to go straight down to the ball. Well, yeah, that straight line's got to be forward, not so the chopping one by far is definitely the one that is the worst. Another one is letting the ball travel deep in the zone. Zepp did a study here, I think it was 2014, about where the contact point should be. It's a great study. If you go to Zepp, they probably have it on their website or on their Twitter page.
Done interviews with Zepp.
Yeah, so it's the contact point, you know, on all pitches needs to be on the front side of their body. So what you think and what actually happens are totally different. So what you think might be let the ball travel a little bit, let the ball get deep, but when you contact the ball, it better be on the front side of your body. Now, obviously, if it's a pitch inside, it's going to be more far out in front. An outside pitch is going to be a little bit deeper, but it's still on the front side of the body. And you go watch any good contact in a big league game, it's always on the front side of their body. So that whole let the ball travel thing is definitely something a lot of players. Now, some kids need it. Now, I've told kids myself, hey, you need to let the ball travel. You need to let the ball get deep. But you still got to explain it. Hey, you let the ball travel, but you still got to get your contact point out in front. So that one is a big one, too, as well. And then the last one, and when I say this, everyone's going to probably be like, oh, man, I said that a million times, is get the front foot down early. So it's something that's said every game I go to, every baseball, every softball game that I'm at, everyone that I'm watching, hey, get your front foot down, getting your front foot down early ruins timing and momentum for most kids. Now, there's, you know, 5% of big leaguers get their actual front foot down early, and that works, and that's fine, and I'm not saying not to do it. But for the most part, you got to make sure that the front foot down doesn't get down, or sorry, the front foot doesn't get down early. It gets down on time and quickly. So the whole front foot down actually ruins timing, ruins momentum, ruins bat speed, and it just ruins your whole approach. You're so focused on what your foot's doing versus getting in there compete in the bat. So those are kind of the top three. There's more I can get into, but the list goes on and on and on.
Sure, we could be on this podcast with you for 6 days. What about when you say don't let the ball get deep in the zone? If it gets too deep in the zone, it's gonna, and they happen to hit it, it's gonna go foul anyways, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yes. When I see the kids that, you know, are taught to let the ball travel deep, they can't pull anything. They get jammed on inside pitches. They foul off a lot of balls. It's just a prevalent thing that happens out there. And again, it's not necessarily a wrong thing for some hitters, but then it goes back to what? It goes back to giving hitters what they need individually. That sure. Kid that's way out in front and everything, and he pulls everything, and he can't hit the ball even up the middle, that's the kid that you might want to think about letting the ball travel a little bit deeper. But it's still, contact needs to be out in front.
Is there anything particular you do to let kids understand, like when you're giving that lesson, to let kids feel or understand how to do that?
Yeah, it's just explanation of contact points, and obviously it's explanation of what the hands are doing, where the contacts are supposed to be, where the head is, all that kind of stuff. There's no you know, magic formula that I have. It's just kind of showing them where it should be, and then obviously getting it done in a game-like feel or setting is important too. I think that's where kids don't understand it too, or I think that's where the whole letting the ball travel thing comes. Kids spend so much time doing soft toss and front toss and, you know, 30-mile-an-hour BP. Well, of course you have to let the ball travel on that, and then sure. You get to a game where there's some velocity behind it, and they wonder why they're late every time. So yeah. To show those kids on a live game-like pitch of where their contact point actually makes more sense.
Okay, and we are, we're going to cover a couple more things, then we're going to take a short break for our listeners and our coaches around the world. You know, keep in mind, this is so important, all this stuff that we're hearing here from Troy. You know, we've all been there. You know, I've been in 33 years, and I know that I've made many mistakes. But, you know, if you keep learning, keep listening to guys like Troy, you're just going to get better as a coach because we're all going to make some mistakes. And Troy, I talked, some of the things, you know, like you were talking about earlier, wondering, you know, why somebody would teach chopping down. You know, when I was a young coach, that's what I was taught to do. Right. So what do we do? Teach what we were taught many times. And that's what we're trying to tell coaches is you don't always have to teach what you've been taught 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm guilty of the same thing. I've said get your front foot down early. I've said go down to the ball as far as chopping. I've done the same thing. So I've just learned over the years that those things just don't work. Some of the times they do. And I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, it goes back to just giving kids what they need. Some of those times, you know, a kid needs to think chopping down to the ball. Some of the times he needs to think letting the ball travel deep. Some of the times he needs to maybe get his front foot down early because that helps him individually. So from my past failures and things that I've seen, it's prevalent out there that these things definitely need to be fixed.
And that reminds me of something that I didn't say in the coaching philosophy, but that you have said in some of your talks. You said, you know, as coaches, and I want you to just elaborate on this, as coaches, you know, when we make mistakes, we need to own up to them and just let people know, let our players know that we make mistakes.
I agree 100%. I guess, yeah, I have said that before. It's I've had to say that multiple times to teams and say, hey, I messed up. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done that. Or I've done a lesson where I'm like, yeah, that really didn't work. You know, so let's try it this way. Owning up to your mistakes and just kind of taking responsibility for your actions is something that's something we have to do. And it's apologizing. Sometimes you have to ask for forgiveness and move on. So I agree with that 100% that we have to make sure we're owning up to our mistakes.
That's great. Now, when it comes to hitting, obviously you've got your mechanics, your stance, all that stuff. But everything starts. I mean, and I'm just throwing this out and asking you what your thoughts are. And everything starts when that pitcher releases the ball. So shouldn't we be focusing really hard on that aspect before we do anything?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the first thing I always look at when it comes to more advanced type hitters is the timing, is the timing of when they're ready to hit, the timing of their stride or the timing of their front foot hitting the ground, the timing of their hands being ready to hit, the timing of are they ready to hit per that individual pitcher on a slower guy or a faster guy. So the timing, especially with the advanced hitters, is usually the kind of a deal breaker. So that's kind of the first thing I usually start with is the timing, when to load, when to stride, when to shift the body weight, when to actually start to swing. If the timing's off a little bit, you're going to see a lot of the swing flaws that are created. You know, I see a lot of kids that, you know, they'll have a long swing or their head will pull up and it's dictated because of timing. And then the timing creates a bad contact point and it's kind of this circle effect that happens. So, yes, you know, when the pitcher's releasing the ball, the timing is like, it's so important to create better results, but it's also so important because it can create swing flaws too.
And what about picking up the ball? How important is that? And how do you train? How do you train young kids to, you know, I want to say see the ball because that's the most obvious word to use. Because I would assume if you see the ball, you've got a much better idea on how to time it also.
Well, without a doubt, vision is one of the top things that are in the importance of hitting. You know, if you don't see it, you can't hit it. So the vision, how quick you pick it up, how well you recognize pitches out of the hand, how well you can get to that release point, decide to make the decision to swing or not, it's so important. And I think it goes back to kids these days aren't good at that because, number one, they don't put enough effort and time into doing that. And number two, they spend too much time on the tee. They spend too much time doing soft toss and too much time doing front toss, doing what? Working on their swing versus working on things that are actually going to improve on the field, like the timing and the vision and pitch recognition and pitch selection and all that stuff. So I don't have a one way of doing it. You know, everybody has different ways. You can focus on the shoulder, pick up the ball. You can just kind of look at the release point. You can look at the hat and then the ball. There's no one way of doing it. But what I do recommend is doing more challenging drills on a day-to-day basis. That will actually help that. So I just did a drill on our RehoBaseball.tv for pitch recognition and vision where you basically cut the cage in half, you get about 20, 30 feet away from a hitter, and you just try to hide the ball as long as you can and dart it on them quickly. So they got to kind of see the ball really quick and react. But if they don't see it, that's what's going to see, or that's what you're going to see as far as swing flaws too, is vision and pitch recognition plays a big role in why swing flaws occur too as well.
You know, what about bat speed? What does that allow you to do if you have better bat speed or quicker bat speed?
Well, it's confidence, 100% confidence. I mean, I work on this probably at least 75% of the time is bat speed. Bat speed creates confidence. Confidence creates the ability to get in there and compete. Plus, it allows you to see the ball longer, make later decisions, recognize pitches a little bit deeper. I mean, the bat speed is huge. Besides just the overall, you know, power that it generates and the quickness, it just builds such a confidence. And most people don't spend time working on bat speed. You ask 90% of our, you ask all the kids, 90% of them will say they don't work on bat speed on a regular basis. And that's one of the key confidence builders is that bat speed, be able to trust your bat speed. You hear trust your hands all the time, trust your hips all the time. But if you don't trust your bat speed, you're cheating. You can't compete. You end up swinging at bad pitches. I mean, again, it goes back to swinging. The swing flaws will occur because of lack of bat speed.
And you can increase your bat speed. There's ways to do that.
Oh, absolutely. The number one way to increase your bat speed is get aggressive. I mean, I do it all the time. I mean, there's in my book, there's the bat speed section. I think there's five or six ways that I put in there to increase bat speed. The number one way to increase bat speed is get a little fired up, get a little aggressive, and stop trying to focus on what your swing is doing all the time and get in there and swing the bat. So if you go to, I think it's chapter 3 of 9 Innings of Hitting, there's a whole chapter on how to create your bat speed, depending on how old you are and stuff like that. But the number one thing is the mentality of swinging the bat versus trying to make it work.
Wow, outstanding. Okay, and we obviously encourage all our listeners around the world to get Troy's book. We're going to put that on the website. But right now, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with the second part of our interview with Troy.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at insidepitchpodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter and get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.